Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Hello, and welcome to the Betches Up Podcast. I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Amanda Duberman.
And for those of you who are just tuning in, the Betches Up Podcast is your weekly rundown of all the crazy shit that's happened in the news, explained by your two funniest friends,
which is us.
Today we're talking about Kamala's departure,
Trump's trip to London for NATO,
and Melania's crocodile tears.
Let's get into it.
Betches Media presents.
I like beer. I don't know if you do. Okay. Do you like beer, Senator, or not?
My party is going bet crazy.
You're the pop. Alternative facts.
Oh, goodness.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
America!
Here we are.
Here we are.
It's been, I know that there was a podcast on Monday, but so much has.
It's wild.
I feel like this is how we start every episode, that we're just like,
I know.
Oh my God, so much has happened. But I know. Really a lot has happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever I'm like trying to write descriptions and stuff, it's like, what's next for impeachment? But what's really next? What's next?
Yeah, I know. I keep trying to come up with subjects for the newsletter that aren't just like,
still impeaching.
It's happening. We're still doing it. It's still the next step is here.
I know.
But that is what's happening.
Yeah.
And then it's also sometimes I'm like, when you're putting together I'll look at the outline that you put together, which Amanda works so hard on our outlines and she makes them so good.
Oh, thanks.
And then I'll be like, surely that happened before Monday.
Yeah.
And then it's like, no.
I know.
It was yesterday.
I know.
It was five years ago.
I know it's a stressful week because I've been jeweling a lot this week and my voice sounds,
the jewel voice.
Yeah.
I know.
Welcome.
I just watched, have you seen the Netflix series Broken?
No.
It's about
various
things that are broken. And there's an episode on jewels that will scare you.
Oh, nice. Good.
And
that's good. No, I need to be scared.
Not to put any pressure on you, but if you want to be freaked out about your jewel, you
the
can
problem
watch
is that.
That.
Oh, I'm very. The problem is that, like, the bodegas around where I live are, I think they're trying to, like, offload them, and they're, like, very cheap. So I usually will just, like, if I feel like I'm doing it too much, which is at all, I'll, like, throw it away for a week. And that used to, like, be a barrier because then I'd have to pay, like, $50 to get it back. I smoked cigarettes for a really long time.
Yes.
Quit. I don't know why. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. Now I'm like, jewels?
Well,
great.
I felt like I smoked cigarettes for a long time, used the jewel to quit. Now I'm off the jewel, but I feel like the jewel was helpful to quit.
Yes.
And they kind of addressed that in Broken.
Okay.
So,
it definitely is. I picked it back up when, like, I was finding I was really tempted by cigarettes again, but I also, like, found that since I don't smoke cigarettes, I'm kind of grossed out by them now. Like, it's harder. I'm like, but there's this little computer that's so much better.
It's weird. It was weird how much the transition for me personally happened. And if any of you guys are listening out there who were thinking about quitting smoking, this is my personal experience.
Never start either,
kids. Also, just don't, if you're thinking of picking it up, don't do that. It's actually, I don't know if you've heard this, pretty addictive, hard to quit once you get involved. So, when I started juuling to quit smoking, cigarettes became gross to me pretty fast, which was really helpful.
Yeah.
Not that I won't have a drink and engage in like one casual cigarette every once in a while. But what I will say about Broken before we get into the news, because I'm sure everyone wants to hear about this obscure Netflix series, is that the first episode is about counterfeit makeup, and that one scared the crap out of me.
Cool.
Real vendors. Yeah. Don't buy knockoff makeup. There's poo-poo and pee-pee in there.
Oh. And knockoff vapes seem... Knockoffs are not great in this
it's really
genre.
Just don't buy knockoff stuff. Yeah. They got a lot of crazy shit in there. They're making them in the back of a van. It's not good.
Or they're made by, like, straight up very popular YouTube stars that then they're like, there's, like, metal in this lipstick. Yeah.
Still in the back of a van, though.
Yeah. Makeup is the patriarchy. Don't touch it. No, I'm just kidding. Do whatever you want.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah. Speaking of the patriarchy, at the end of this episode, I have an interview with Teresa Younger, who is the CEO of the Ms. Foundation for Women.
Yay.
We are going to have Teresa on regular. We've had her on before to talk about equal pay. We're going to have her on regularly to just talk about how the issues we talk about in every podcast directly impact women. We often get a chance to talk about that, but we wanted to make sure we had like a dedicated place to do that every couple of weeks. So we started with healthcare, because when we first started talking about doing this, we're like, well, this healthcare came up in that debate, so maybe it's we should, mm-hmm. and then it came up again and again and in every single debate.
Yeah.
So
it's the issue of the Democratic primary, yeah. I feel. So. Yeah.
But we talked a lot about, you know, the not intuitive or not obvious ways that barriers to accessing healthcare affect women, and there are lots of them, and it's terrifying. And actually, like, what to do about it.
That's awesome. Yeah. And everybody should look into the Ms. Foundation too.
Yes.
Because it's a really cool organization.
Love them.
All right. Enough chit chat, or on to the scheduled chit chat.
Tell me what's getting you through the week.
Okay. By now, everybody has seen it, but we gotta talk about Peloton. The Peloton ad. For those of you guys who don't know, Peloton is a stationary bike company. You get a stationary bike. I love a cycling class. I've looked into Peloton. It's a little cost prohibitive for me personally, but I don't knock anybody who wants to ride a bike at their house. However, Peloton released a holiday commercial this year.
It does sound really stupid when you say it. Like, I know people love it.
Yeah, but it's like, funny. You want to ride a bike in the house? That's
Go
fine.
For it.
You could do it outside for cheaper, but hey, you want to ride a bike in the house? I get it. Peloton released a holiday ad that was immediately roasted by far and wide. Yeah. Basically, the premise of the ad is a very frightened looking woman gifted a Peloton by her husband, and the whole thing has a very Black Mirror-ish quality to it. A lot of people were saying, they were like, this is a Black Mirror episode. And then she spends the next year making a video of herself using the Peloton over the course of the year, and then his gift the next Christmas is her video of herself using the bike.
She is thin. And
yes,
I guess I would say ethnically ambiguous.
Yeah,
but she's very thin.
Yes, she's like a thin
from the beginning.
She's an extremely gorgeous woman. So basically, it sparked all the conversation about, like, number one, should you get your wife fitness equipment
for
Christmas?
She doesn't ask.
If she is completely surprised by it, maybe not. Should you buy your wife something for $2,000 without discussing that expense with her first? Maybe not.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the main thing about the ad, I feel like the other stuff about the ad wouldn't have gotten as crazy of a play if the ad itself wasn't so weird.
Yeah.
Like when I'm describing it, I feel like you at home, if you haven't seen it, would be like, I don't know, that sounds like it could be fine. But if you actually watch it, it's got an eerie hostage quality.
We were
going to
put a clip in it, but I was like, I watched that. I watch it with my eyes closed, and I was like, no, it doesn't work. You have to watch it. That's the thing, is that she is trapped in her home.
Yeah.
Pedaling to nowhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Taking videos of herself for a year.
Yes. My favorite is that she's like, I'm really nervous, but here we go. And it's like, nervous to ride a stationary bike at your house?
Right. I know. And you know what? I think maybe I was listening to this on a podcast, but Peloton, like, people make good ass friends in their Peloton classes. There are communities. Yeah. And I think that's pretty dope. Like, and I wish that they could have made a really cool commercial based on that. But this was bizarre.
My best guess is that this was something that was a very normal idea when pitched in the room, and something happened between pitch and execution where we got this nightmare scenario. So, Peloton has responded. Basically, ever since the ad went viral, I've been waiting. When is Peloton going to say something? When is Peloton going to say something?
They're just spinning their wheels.
Is the woman in the ad in the witness protection program now? Like, what's going on? Because I do feel bad for her, because I could, like, as someone who goes out for commercials, I would be like, oh, whenever I'm going to do this stupid commercial. Right. And then they cut it together and it's so scary and it's viral and now I'm a meme. Like, that is a nightmare to me. So my heart goes out to Peloton, girl.
You would spin it. Figure it out.
I would have to. If I became a meme, I would have to embrace having become a meme.
Yes.
Publicly.
You would be like Fiji Girl, but.
Yes. But real.
Much, much better. Real. Yeah.
Not staged.
Well, how did they respond to this?
Okay, so Peloton responded. They told CNBC, we were disappointed in how some have misinterpreted this commercial. We are encouraged by and grateful for the outpouring of support we've received from those who understand what we were trying to communicate. And then, and this is what was the saddest to me, is they included screenshots of like a couple emails that they got from people being like, I liked the ad, and
so
a screenshot of one positive Facebook post. And I'm just like, you can find somebody to post something positive on Facebook about anything.
Yes.
Anything.
And then you wrote, and that's how Nazis happen.
Yes. That's what I said in the newsletter. Like, literally, we got Nazis because a couple people on Facebook right. were like, honestly, pro.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's like, I don't mind it. What's the big problem? And this week, Peloton stock tumbled by 9%. That's yeah. $942 million in market value.
I'm sure they'll be fine, ultimately. Yeah, I'm not worried about them. I don't think yeah. that Peloton is an evil company. I honestly think...
The ad was just weird and funny. And yeah. I have not read that many people who sincerely had a problem with it. Yeah, don't get your partner something that implies their
yeah.
their body needs to change.
Unless she's like a huge cycling person, which like maybe put sure, that in the right. ad. Yeah. Where it's her like...
If you go to Peloton classes all the time, I don't know if they have them anywhere other than New York.
They have, yeah, they have you classes can go to studios. In New York. But maybe they could have done... An ad like slowly poking, this is me pitching yeah. to Peloton who's listening, slowly poking at like the other cycling studios, and it shows her and she's so exhausted and she's having a hard time getting to and from her cycling classes, right. but she loves cycling and it makes her feel good. And then at the end of the ad, her husband gives her the Peloton, and it makes yes. sense because this is a genuine interest that she has and it's actually going to help her and all of this stuff. Or what you were saying where it's like a lonely person yeah. on their bike and they make a bunch of friends.
For the Peloton community.
Or I don't know. Maybe we take Christmas out of it. Whatever.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But this ad was, I remember watching it and just being like, this is weird.
Yeah.
She's also alternately switching between like vertical and horizontally filming herself, which makes it hard for her.
It's
just stylistically, you need to make a choice if this is a Christmas gift for your husband.
Yeah.
And also she moves the Peloton from her living room to the basement and all over the house. Different.
Is that just a highlight, like how portable it is? I think maybe. It's still pretty heavy.
Maybe. It is like, I think it's like.
So when your husband makes you go in the basement for a while, yeah. you can take your yeah, exercise routine with you.
Yeah, he's like, get out of my face. Yeah. Yeah. She goes into the basement.
Okay, I'll send you a video later.
All right, Amanda. What has been getting you through this week in Trump's America?
Okay, a lot of things. We did actually have a lot of things to choose from this week. So we're going to get into this a little bit later in detail. But yesterday, the House Judiciary Committee had its first hearing in the impeachment inquiry of this next phase. We'll talk about the details. But the context you need for this is that they had four renowned legal scholars, mm-hmm. One of them from Stanford, one from Harvard, one from UNC Chapel Hill, one from George Washington U. The two from Stanford mm-hmm. and Harvard, I guess, were sort of the most seemed to make the strongest case against yes. Trump. They sort of spoke to like what the Constitution, what the framers would want us to do. All three of the three were handpicked by Democrats, one by Republicans. But afterwards, Republicans, you know, they always have a new thing to pick on.
Yeah.
When they're left with nothing. So a gentleman named Louie Gohmert, a Republican from Texas, he was so outraged by these legal scholars' opinions that this is what he recommended to Americans who are concerned.
And so all I got to say is, if you love America, mamas, don't let your babies grow up to go to Harvard or Stanford Law School.
Wow.
Wow, indeed.
You love your babies.
Don't so send funny. Them to the top universities. I know.
It's funny because like people already make sort of like vague jokes about people on the right not respecting intellect. Like, I hated how smart Obama was. But this is like for him to actually straight up say, women of America, if you care about the future of our nation, do not let your child go to an Ivy League school.
Right? It's also bizarre because the lawyer that the Republicans brought in went to George Washington, yeah. which is a super elite college itself. And who's their boy? Brett Kavanaugh, who's, right. you know, got his penis out at Yale right. running around.
Yeah. Like, Yale law is fucking fine.
Yeah. So it's, well, first of all, it's like picky and choosy, but also just mamas, don't send your babies so to Harvard is. Very funny.
It's very funny.
It's very, very funny. Oh. Wow. I love that being the takeaway.
Yeah, right. That was his only, well, he can find nothing wrong with what they actually said. Mm-mm. So it's just like, well, Harvard and Stanford corrupted them.
Yeah. Also, there are mad Republicans at Harvard and Stanford.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Many, many, many Republicans.
Yes.
like, listen, bud, don't worry. Your side is represented there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Like, my friend went to Harvard, and guess who his classmate was?
Who?
Jared Kushner. Mm-hmm. They were friends. They've exchanged emails. I asked him about
it.
Really? Mm-hmm. He said polite via email.
Yes. I can see that. Yeah, I can see that.
I think they, it wasn't, you know, he wasn't renting from him or like anything. Yeah, like he wasn't a tenant of his. So I think they had a fine relationship.
Yeah. Just, could you kindly vacate the home you've lived in for?
Yes. He did tell me that when they would be hanging out socially, Jared would always have to like take calls and leave because like something was going wrong with one of his buildings.
He was literally a landlord. Yeah,
because he was a landlord in college, which is like...
And they didn't maintain their building, so there was always something wrong.
Because the landlord was a college student. Yeah. Like, I don't want my landlord...
Outside of Boston.
Yeah, exactly. Some fucking college student who's actively at Harvard.
The tenant's where are you renting? He's like, oh, I'm right outside of Boston.
Yeah. I want my landlord to be like a dude named Louie who lives two doors down and does not do anything else.
Maybe Louie Gohmert's a landlord. Yeah.
Maybe, and that's a respectable job for him to have.
Should we get into the main news?
We should.
NATO.
I know. We're going to start abroad, and then we're going to zoom back in domestically.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, as I was doing the island, I was thinking of like a Sex and the City episode, and it's like, meanwhile, in Washington, D.C. But in London earlier this week, Donald Trump met with other world leaders in the NATO alliance for a few days of gaffe-filled meetings and the continued degradation of our place in the international community.
Yeah, it's a pretty good explanation of what happened.
I would say, first of all, what is NATO? Whenever this comes up, I'm always like, NATO, NAFTA, am I having the correct reaction to everything? Yes. NATO is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, also called the North Atlantic Alliance. It's an intergovernmental military alliance between 29 countries. It's basically like a system of collective defense where we all defend each other if one of us get attacked. It came in mighty handy for us around 9/11.
Yes.
It's pretty key to like keeping us safe.
Yeah. And it's, am I wrong in saying it's like a Cold War era thing or I think
right after the Second World War.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, it's a...
But I think it helped like make the Cold War not as dangerous as it could have been because we're all obligated to protect each other.
Right. Because Russia's not in NATO.
I believe not.
Russia, and like Russia, every time NATO meets up, they all talk about Russia.
Russia and China. That's all they talk about. They just talk about our friends that aren't here.
Exactly. Yeah. They're like, we have to have a whole meeting to talk about Russia.
Yeah. And what is Trump's beef with NATO? It seems to be that his general beef is that we spend too much money on things. Yes. He doesn't seem to like spending a dime for anything international.
Yes. That's his beef with like all of our alliances. He's always saying that America pays more than everybody else and we get the least out of it. That's his argument. That's not my argument.
Well, we do pay. Yeah.
I mean, but we're the biggest, richest, baddies.
Right, like,
we pay the most.
And the fact that these guys have signed up to help us defend ourselves is like, I think we can afford to pay a little more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, also, if something goes down, it's definitely going to be because of something we did. we're 100% involved.
No. Yeah. So. The Netherlands aren't going to be like, oops, so we kind of stepped in it.
Yeah, and then everyone's like, let's get to it. That's not how it's going to happen.
Yeah, protect their prostitution and weed.
Yeah.
So he basically singled out other nations so there's this goal that nations would contribute 2% of their GDP to the defense budget. They set that goal in 2014. A lot of the nations are not close. The U.S. spent about 3.4% of GDP. So that seems to be like the background issue that Trump doesn't think that we're getting enough for what we put in.
I know. I'm like, who even told him that?
I know. I know.
He didn't just know that. Who told him?
Exactly. That's like whenever he seems to have an explanation to something that seems like it could be driven by an actual philosophy,
even
if it's wrong, I'm always very interested in what the source for that is.
How did you get this information into his, how did we squirrel it away into the brain there?
He met with French President Macron, some viral clips out of that. They were basically fighting the whole time.
Yeah, and they used to be bros.
Yeah, they gave each other, Macron gave him like a friendship tree.
Yeah, he did give them a friendship tree, and they had those long handshakes, long sensual handshakes. Yeah. But they are not friends anymore.
Yeah.
Macron basically, prior to this press conference they did where they just yelled at each other for like however long, Macron had complained about a quote unquote brain death of NATO that he attributed in part to a lack of U.S. leadership. So he got asked about that comment in front of Trump because all these reporters are messy. And if we get to World War III, it's because of them.
Totally.
So we asked him about it, and Macron was like, yeah, a lot of people have been sensationalizing those comments, but also I stand 100% yeah. behind them. Right. And I said what I said, basically.
Even Angela Merkel didn't like that he said that. The German chancellor apparently was like, that's a sweeping judgment. Yeah.
But I feel like Angela Merkel was like,
yo, man, I'm fucking smart, too. I've been around for 15 years yeah. keeping this together. How dare you? Yeah. He can go.
And also just like, maybe we don't aggravate the right. insane old man that we all have to like...
Yeah.
Play nice with.
But we did.
But oh, did they?
Oh my goodness.
So after this press conference, which was kind of a mess, they got in a fight about like how many ISIS fighters are actually from France. They got in a fight about a lot of things. It was not good.
And then he sort of fought with Trudeau too later. I think yes. they just sort of like sparred. I didn't hear yes. as much about that one.
So then they go to the palace yeah. and a video gets taken of Justin Trudeau of Canada, Emmanuel Macron of France, Boris Johnson, who's supposed to be
what the hell?
Trump's little twin buddy.
Yeah.
Just shows how two-faced that motherfucker is. And Princess Anne, who yeah. I could spend all day talking about how much I yeah. love Princess Anne now that I've finished The Crown. Yeah. But
and Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte.
Oh, I forget. I left the Dutch him out Prime Minister this morning
when
or
yesterday morning when I posted it, and I meant to go back, and then like about 10 Dutch people responded on Instagram
and
stories like,
he was there too.
Mark was there.
Mark was also there. Okay, yeah. Mark, shout out Mark. Mark was there.
Yeah.
Justice for Mark.
Yeah.
So they were all caught pretty obviously talking shit about Trump. The juiciest parts of the shit talking were inaudible on the
yeah.
tape, which is probably good for world peace, yeah. but sad for me yeah. personally, who loves
right.
people it talking shit about the president.
It seemed to be like Justin Trudeau, I think, is like a yenta. He seemed to yes. be like really in, like letting, yes. blowing off some steam. So it seemed yeah. to start really, I'm sure you guys have all seen it. They're talking about like why Macron was late, and then just, well, he was late because Trump does a 40-minute press conference, blah, blah. And then he talks about how like watching Trump's team's jaw drop to the floor whenever he does anything. Mm-hmm. And you can see Justin Trudeau, like, he wants to talk so much. He wants so much to say.
It's like when you get to talk shit about yes. your weird oh my God, neighbor, totally. Like the angry man who lives next door. Yes. And you're just like,
yes.
Have you seen? Yes. Like, finally, your friends come over for dinner and they see the angry man who lives next door doing right. some of his weird stuff. And you're like, see?
Yeah.
This is what I deal with every day, this yes, guy.
Exactly.
He's at yeah. my window. He's screaming.
Literally.
So they never mention Trump by name.
No.
But it's very clear.
Yeah.
Context clues.
Yeah.
Who they're all talking about. They're all laughing.
And none of them have denied it.
No, exactly. Also, like, no one has...
Was like, again, yeah, I said that.
But no one has been like, no, we were actually talking about this guy.
Yeah.
No, we were talking about Jeffrey Epstein. We hate yeah. him. Like, they were not. They've all just been like, I wish that video hadn't been released. Yeah. Like, so caught red-handed talking shit.
Yeah.
Trump afterwards was asked about
Justin Trudeau had actually painted his hand red.
What?
No,
I was, I was like, what? I got confused because Justin Trudeau's history of painting joke. Himself. Yes, yes. Exactly. There we go. I was like, wait, Justin painted. Oh God, Justin. Oh, Justin, no.
He's happy to be back.
So Trump got asked about it afterwards. He called Trudeau two-faced. But he also, the weird thing is he also tried to kind of, he tried to be like, well, Justin's two-faced. But also it doesn't bother me. And like, I kind of yeah. don't care. And like, whatever. They're just mad because I'm cool. I'm actually cooler than them. Yeah. And like, the reason why I wasn't invited to their party was because I didn't yeah. want to be invited. And like, that's why I didn't go, because I wasn't right. invited and I didn't want to be.
And then he was like, Trudeau's, I don't know, he's a nice guy. And then apparently later, I didn't see this part, but Trump like is like, you just hear when I said that too? That was funny, that two-faced thing, right?
It's like
not a joke.
It's like, I was like, it's not
it's
funny.
It's like
when
you
really.
Called your friend in seventh grade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, whatever. If that, yeah. that's probably how he feels about Justin Trudeau now. But then Trump also was supposed to have a press conference later in the day. He cut that off. And then he tweets and he's like, actually, we've been having too many press conferences, so I think I'm just going to come back early.
Yeah, I'm going to go.
I think it really hurt his feelings.
I think so.
Because some of his boys were in there, namely Boris Johnson.
And I had read that, like, even the day before, somebody affiliate associated with Boris Johnson asked Trump not to, like, there's this not theory, but there's a suggestion that there are British leaders that are open to selling the National Health Service to the United States. There's something,
I heard something about this.
I don't understand. Honestly, I don't understand how that's possible or how that would work, but apparently it's a real threat. And there were lots of protests about it when Trump was there. So but then when asked about it, Trump was like, no, I don't know where you got that. I've never heard of that, even though Trump started the rumor. And I read that he was sort of asked to do that to make Boris Johnson look okay because he has an election coming up.
Yes.
Like, not to really like harp on that too much. And then the guy's like, oh, is that why you were late?
Well, yeah, they do have an election coming up. So I wonder if that's why Boris is like cooled on Donald. Yeah. But also, I feel like if we know anything about Boris Johnson, it's that he's like, he's two-faced.
Yes.
He's the two-faced one.
Yeah.
Justin Trudeau is two-faced for
a lot
other
of faces,
reasons.
Yeah.
Yes, but not this. So, and Macron, I think, is on the up and up, as is Princess Anne.
Yeah.
Love Anne.
Right.
You know what I learned in the... Well, there was also a video of Anne that people thought was her shunning Trump, but it's actually really kind of not.
Yeah.
It was just her being late, I think to a meeting.
Right.
But my favorite Princess Anne fact, which I learned after all of this, is that she was once the victim of an attempted kidnapping, and when a man at gunpoint told her to get out of the car, she said, not bloody likely.
Love it.
I love that. Okay.
Good for her. She's having a viral week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, and her, after her star turn in The Crown,
yeah,
the royals need a win this week.
They
let's
do.
Just say. I mean, they're fine, but they'll be fine forever. But it's definitely nice that they've got a fun one
right
out in front right now.
Yeah, Prince Andrew should stay in his room forever.
Yes, the Queen canceled his birthday.
I know, it's so funny.
That makes me laugh so hard.
I know.
I mean, I wish he faced like real consequences weren't just the Queen canceling his birthday. But there's something particularly nice that his birthday was canceled.
Yeah, I agree. It's perfect.
Yeah. All right. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C.
Meanwhile, okay. Yesterday, the House Judiciary Committee, like we were talking about, held its first hearing to the impeachment inquiry. This came a day after Adam Schiff's Intelligence Committee released its report. It basically said everything we know. It was 300 pages. Main conclusions: the president abused his power by leveraging symbolic and financial support in exchange for help smearing a political opponent, basically. There was overwhelming evidence he did this. These actions also amount to soliciting election interference from a foreign government, and these actions compromise national security, and that he tried to cover it up. Is there anything new in this? Yeah, there were some fun call records that showed Rudy Giuliani making a lot of calls to the White House and to people like Mike Pompeo, John Bolton, Devin Nunes, Sean Hannity, not in the White House, and a mysterious number listed only as -1 that is believed to be Trump, because apparently that was his number in matters having to do with the Mueller investigation.
That's his IQ. Yes.
Exactly. And I think like individual one is what the president is referred to as. Yeah. And these are all around the time that he was working to oust Maria Yovanovitch. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of indicates that there was an orchestrated effort, or even if not everybody was in on it and it's insidious, they knew about it. He was working to inform them. He was trying to get in touch with them about this.
You know what's also crazy to me? That Rudy Giuliani is currently in Ukraine in interviewing prosecutors for a documentary he wants to make about how impeachment is a sham.
Do this.
Who?
Somebody on our that follows us on Instagram sent me a picture of him on his flight.
Oh my god.
I was like, where is this? Like Norwegian Air business class to Rome?
That I just feel like that must have been a thing where he just got the idea and he went and nobody knew that that was happening until like someone in the White House was like, "Oh dear god. He's gone to Ukraine." Why?
I mean, just like, you're going to do a podcast and like, this is just more evidence. You're literally creating evidence.
That is how my projects tend to develop, though. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do a podcast. And I'm like, you know what? No, I got to go.
It's got to be a doc.
It's a documentary. Yeah. I'm starting a Kickstarter. I'm, you know what? I'm on a plane to Ukraine.
Totally.
He's trying to get his like goals in for the end of the year. And he's like, I did say I would make a documentary this year.
Right. Yeah. It's on my goal.
It's on my goals. Okay.
So that's on there. And then the judiciary held its hearing. I mean, it was kind of boring. It was interesting for a while, but it was a long one. It was like all day. Four people, three chosen by Democrats, one by Republicans. They just shared like different historical elements of why impeachment would be justified. I mean, it was a little bit less interesting to me just because I didn't have to watch that closely to see if any new evidence was coming out. But they said two things that sort of made me look at impeachment in a different way. One, that it's also a function to make sure that presidents do not become kings.
Yeah.
Like, that's just hearing, like, you forget because it's never been, like, a problem. Like, they were so fucking worried about a monarchy.
Yeah.
And they're like, any foreign influence could be something that puts us down that path. And another one that they said a couple of times that a president that sort of, like, has a sketchy election in the begin with should be watched extra closely to see if they do it again.
Yeah.
And I just had never heard either of those things before, and I found them really compelling. And they're obviously not flattering for Trump or necessarily relevant to, like, his, I mean, they are relevant to his specific actions, but there were just different dimensions that I heard yesterday that was like, oh shit, yeah, we got to do this. We got to do this now. But
and then we should say that the Republican pick, who is also a legal scholar who was invited to speak, he's the one who's from George Washington. He basically said, his argument was that, like, yeah, presidents should be impeached for abuses of power, but the House hasn't actually proven that, like, those were committed yet, and this is going too fast. He called it, like, slipshod.
Yeah.
Which is a fun, a fun elite college's word to use.
He said his dog was mad. Did you hear that part?
No.
He was like, I know everybody's mad. My neighbor's mad. My wife's mad. My kid's mad. My dog's mad. And she's a golden doodle. She never gets mad.
Oh, that's a cute joke.
Yeah, it was.
That's cute. You know? Okay. But his argument was basically, we're going way too fast. This hasn't been proven yet. The evidence is shoddy.
Yeah.
You don't have, the case isn't there yet.
Yeah, he was like, I don't think the call is perfect. He said he didn't vote for Trump. His opening statement, I was worried because I found it like to the people it would need to be convincing for, I think it probably was. But obviously the other three got like so much airtime. And then after that, there was a clip going around of him speaking. He was also an expert for the Clinton impeachment. And he basically said, like, we need to do this. We need to preserve the office and we need to hold people accountable.
That's I mean, that's really something. Right. I mean, I guess I would say the Republicans had a better day yesterday than the other hearings.
Yeah.
Just
by
virtue of the fact that they were, I think, able to make their case more. It was all theoretical.
Yeah.
They weren't like talking to eyewitnesses and like talking to people who were there about things that they saw. So it wasn't like damning evidence was coming out constantly. Yeah. They were just kind of able to argue their case.
But it's interesting because that like, his name is Jonathan Turley. His argument is not theirs. Like, I think he straight up said at one point, no, the call wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
Like,
but you
don't
can
think
see
any...
them getting cocky throughout, kind of, because I think all the, if you're a Republican man in the House, your whole thing is like, debate me.
Yeah.
Debate me. So like, that's like what they love.
Yeah.
So they got to, you know,
right,
bust out their high school debate trophies and be like, but don't you think that in reality?
Yeah,
right. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They had a lot of fun with the sort of breakout star of the day, who was Stanford Law Professor Pamela Karlan, who is like a celebrity in the field. So at various points in the hearing, I mean, she was amazing.
Yeah.
But some of us were talking about this today. Like, you could totally, it's very easy to see why. Like, she's an interesting choice for Democrats just because you can characterize her.
Mm-hmm.
Or character, whatever that word is, a little easier. Like, she was pretty, she like clapped back to like lots of their false claims. She clapped back to accusations that she couldn't possibly be prepared because the report just came out.
Mm-hmm.
She like had a funny critique of like American poverty when Matt Gaetz asked her like why she donated more to Hillary than Elizabeth Warren. She's like, well, I donate more to charity now because there's so many poor people. And then when they asked who'd you vote for, she was like, I have a right to cast a secret ballot.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and then something else that kind of got her into.
Yeah.
I don't even want to say got into trouble because it's so ridiculous.
We'll play the clip and then you guys can decide for yourself how horrible it was.
What? Mr. Collins, I would like to say to you, sir, that I read transcripts of every one of the witnesses who appeared in the live hearing because I would not speak about these things without reviewing the facts. So I'm insulted by the suggestion that as a law professor, I don't care about those facts. But everything I read on those occasions tells me that when President Trump invited, indeed demanded foreign involvement in our upcoming election, he struck at the very heart of what makes this a republic to which we pledge allegiance. So kings could do no wrong because the king's word was law. And contrary to what President Trump has said, Article 2 does not give him the power to do anything he wants. And I'll just give you one example that shows you the difference between him and a king, which is the Constitution says there can be no titles of nobility. So while the president can name his son Barron, he can't make him a Barron.
When you invoke the president's son's name here, when you try to make a little joke out of referencing Barron Trump, that does not lend credibility to your argument. It makes you look mean. It makes you look like you're attacking someone's family, the minor child of the president of the United States.
I want to apologize for what I said earlier about the president's son. It was wrong of me to do that. I wish the president would apologize, obviously, for the things that he's done that's wrong, but I do regret having said that.
And I want to, this was a compilation of her that I pulled from WAPO. She did not respond to that guy yelling at her. I don't think that was immediately after. I think that was later. I don't think she was like, oh, you're right, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I think she might have checked Twitter and been like, ugh.
So what happened on Twitter? Melania has a Twitter? What?
Melania can't.
Melania tweeted, a minor child deserves, Barron Trump is her son with Donald Trump, their only child together. A minor child deserves privacy and should be kept out of politics. Pamela Carlin, you should be ashamed of your very angry and obviously biased public pandering and using a child to do it.
Pence has come out and said it was inappropriate. I mean, this was like a big, this was their whole big thing. It wasn't coming until, out.
I feel like, well, I guess it was in the room, but after Melania was tweeted, then it just like exploded.
But I'm sure the Melania tweet was a calculated thing, because the White House was watching this and they were like, oh, we can take this. We can distract everyone. We can make everyone mad. Look.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even
did she
think
say
of
anything
that.
Bad
no,
about
she didn't.
Barron?
No, the only, I feel like, I don't have kids, but I can imagine that hearing your child's name referenced in a public way when you were not expecting it.
Yeah.
I can see how that would be jarring and sort of pinch, but there's nothing wrong with what she. So Melania is the only person on earth who has any right to even tiniest reaction.
To utter Barron's name.
Right, right. But they made this like as if she was using a child as a political tool. Let's talk about the time that Melania and Donald posed with the orphaned kid after his parents were killed in a Walmart.
Right.
They make fun of Greta on Twitter. Like, if we're going to talk about not using kids as political weapons.
Well, let's talk about what the GOP did to the fucking Parkland kids.
Oh, my
let's
God.
Let's talk about that.
They were minor children.
Yeah. How the GOP treated Chelsea Clinton, who got called ugly every damn day. They did it on, I mean, SNL did that shit to her. Like, obviously, hopefully we've learned, and I think the Obama girls were treated relatively respectfully, but there was still weird stuff. I mean, there was that whole thing where people thought they looked like bored and snooty at like a turkey pardoning or whatever. And they were like, look, they're rolling their eyes. They're wearing inappropriate outfits. Like, it's not every, obviously we should all stray away from directly invoking like the president's minor children who are not involved in politics. Barron Trump is a kid.
He could be involved. He's like Stephen Miller's his babysitter.
Yeah. I mean, what does Barron know? Yeah. Nothing. He's a kid. But like, she just said his name to make a point about like nobility.
It wasn't a critique. It wasn't a critique.
She was like, he's an idiot. Like, it's, I mean, it's, again, I think she probably should have avoided doing that just in general, knowing these people. Like they get really up in arms if you say anything about Barron.
Right.
Like, say, it's like maybe there's a thing where if you say his name three times, he appears or something.
It's
like,
funny that, did Trump tweet anything about it?
I think just Melania, but maybe.
Remember that time when Trump was like,
him.
Said about Melania and Barron, like, well, Melania has a son, and
it's like, he's your son.
He's that tiny man with my last name.
Yeah. I remember the last picture I saw of Barron, he was really well-dressed, I thought. And he's very tall.
I'm sure he has some struggles.
I mean, it cannot be easy for to have Donald Trump as your dad and two to be involved in all of this at all. So I'm definitely pro leaving Barron alone.
Yeah.
But I don't think that this counts as attacking him
not
either.
Not at all. And it's not using him to pander.
Yeah. They were like, it was to make a point, but it's also like, she could have made that point.
You can call your daughter a princess, but you can't make her a princess or something.
She could have just said
Maybe that would have been better.
Yeah, he would be like, he can call Ivanka princess, but he can't make her a princess. Yeah. And then it would have been like 100% of her
She's a grown-ass woman and it's not.
And she's like legitimately involved.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
So I feel like it was probably just like poor form and not good strategy on Professor Carlin's part, but not actually like a malicious or cruel.
And I do think it was wise for her to be like, okay, sorry. Because then she just took away the ammunition, even though they still used it.
Yeah.
Like at least she could be like, I said I was sorry. Like you can't say that I am not compassionate and I can't admit when I was wrong. She said she regretted doing that.
And I do feel like, at least what I was seeing on Twitter, is that they've kind of backed off of it already a little bit.
Oh, yeah, it's like not a thing.
I think because Trump has literally tweeted fucked up stuff at Greta Thunberg, at the Parkland kids, like, it's just the
whistleblower
response,
presumably has, I know some people know his name, presumably has a family, and you're inciting violence against them.
Yeah, like, there was just too much. I mean, I'm sure in very Trumpy circles they're still talking about it, but I at least what I have seen online, people were like, no.
This is nothing. It gave them something to say when they had nothing really else to say yesterday other than that and don't go to Ivy League law schools.
And don't try to achieve the highest points in your field.
So funny.
Okay.
What now? More impeachment? This morning was exciting.
Yes.
This morning at 9 a.m. at 5:30 in the morning, her office sent out something saying, like, we're going to have an announcement, and then CNN looked at the Senate schedule for next year, and the January schedule had been like wiped.
Oh, snap.
For a possible trial. Nancy did say, we're
moving
forward.
Clear your schedule, Mitch.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, okay, how is this different from before? But she said, we are, but before it was like, we're going to explore if we should bring articles of impeachment. This one was, we are doing that. I have told people to do that. She had a meeting with her caucus last night, and I guess she just asked him, like, are we ready? Are we doing this? Mm-hmm. And apparently the answer was yes. She said, she has said over and over again, and I appreciate it. She's like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this. This is not good for any of us. We are not doing this gleefully, but we have looked at all of the evidence and we have no choice.
I bet in her heart, though, it's a little gleeful.
Oh, yeah, totally.
He's so rude to her.
I know.
He's so rude to her.
Because she actually rubs. He is actually threatened by her.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's like, she's gotten the best of him several times in like very public ways. So I think he really has a lot of anger.
All his attempts to undermine her end up looking better for her.
Yeah.
The Democrats had a poster up actually at the hearing yesterday. They joined the poster club that suggested what articles they're pursuing, which were abuse of power / bribery, obstruction of justice, and obstruction of Congress. It's unclear if they'll bring in stuff from the Mueller investigation. I feel like they probably will, because that was like the main, when people were saying after the Mueller testimony or whenever, like, they wanted to impeach for obstruction of justice, right? So I wonder if that's going to be part
of that. And they talked about some of that stuff with the legal scholars yesterday, which would lead you to believe that the Mueller report ain't dead, y'all.
Right.
It's coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
It's back and better than ever.
Yeah, yeah. She said that Democrats won't wait for courts to make decisions about witness testimony. It was interesting because yesterday the Republicans' legal expert was like, why aren't you waiting for these guys to testify? We have asked them. They will not come. The White House will not send them. And the courts don't seem in a rush to like tell us whether they have to come or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, as much as I would love to see these big ticket people compelled to testify, and at first I was like, why aren't they doing that? Now I've kind of come around to their strategy, which is like, they're not going to testify.
Right.
They're not going to come before the House. Maybe they will come before the Senate.
Right. So why not just start that net? Yeah, let's go for it.
And it's like, if they don't want to come defend themselves and like, okay, that's fine. Because now the only people who have testified are people who pretty much back up. Like no one has really meaningfully defended the president except for like a couple witnesses were kind of like, I didn't think the call was that bad. Like these people, by agreeing not to testify, they're also agreeing not to put their own case forward and not to defend themselves and not to give the Republicans anything to go off of or whatever. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Why don't they testify? Like, the more facts, the better, which... And Adam Schiff has said from the beginning that we'll make a negative inference. If you don't come, we're going to assume it's because you have something to hide.
Well, look, if the charge of obstruction of Congress is in there, it's probably because they're not allowing these people who are supposed to come to come. And it would get bogged down in the courts and honestly have to go all the way to the Supreme Court. And who knows what the Supreme Court would say.
Exactly.
So why even force them?
Yeah.
I wish that they could.
Right.
But the Senate apparently has greater powers to call witnesses. I don't know exactly what that entails. And also, since it is Republican controlled, maybe some of those people would be more likely to testify in front right. of the Senate. I don't know.
And,
I feel like they're not going
to. Just one would hope that like the cases that are still caught up in the courts, like, I don't know, maybe John Roberts can make a call. Like, yeah, can we like, hustle this along?
Right.
P.S. the Chief Justice. But also this morning, so Nancy made that announcement. It was like 5 minutes long. It was mm-hmm. fine. And then on her way out, a journalist from Sinclair asked her, just shouted at her, do you hate Donald Trump? And she spun back around. We're going to play the clip, but you have to watch it. It's on our Instagram, too. She spun back around, and this is what she said.
Representative Collins yesterday suggested that the Democrats are doing this simply because they don't like the guy.
I have nothing to do with it. Let me just say this.
I think it's an important
point.
I
think the president is a coward when it comes to helping our kids who are afraid of gun violence. I think he is cruel when he doesn't deal with helping our dreamers, of which we're very proud. I think he's in denial about the climate crisis. However, that's about the election. This is about the election. Take it up in the election. This is about the Constitution of the United States and the facts that lead to the president's violation of his oath of office. And as a Catholic, I resent your using the word hate in a sentence that addresses me. I don't hate anyone. I was raised in a way that is full, a heart full of love, and always prayed for the president. And I still pray for the president. I pray for the president all the time. So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that.
Ooh,
I know.
Oh,
I love that, like, the most poignant display of religious values and politics in years came from a liberal from California.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Don't play with me.
Right. And I thought that in that answer, like, she was walking away and then she runs the whole clip. You can see her like waving her finger. I don't mean that in a bad way. I was like, how do you describe a woman being confrontational mm-hmm. without even sounding a little bit sad? Like, she gets in his face and she's like, I'm pointing. She's like, no, how, like, do not say that to me.
Yeah.
And then runs back to the podium and gives this really, if I were somebody that was on the fence and thought to myself, like, I still don't understand why we don't just wait till the election. She was like, I don't like all of his policies. I hate them. But that's not enough to impeach him.
Yeah.
Like, she's the one that.
She's like, this isn't about his policies. This
urged,
isn't about
right.
that. It's
she was
about
urged
the
to impeach Bush so many times. And she was like, you can't impeach over, the framers don't want us to do this over a maladministration or us as long as his policies. Like,
yeah,
I don't like this. I pray for the man. I hate this.
Yeah. But I don't hate him.
Yes.
I don't hate others.
I just love her popping off. It was amazing.
All right. Should we get into the election section real quick?
Let's do it.
Kamala's out.
She's dropped out.
Kamala dropped out of the race. The senator from California officially ended her 2020 presidential campaign, citing lack of financial resources and unmoving poll numbers.
Yeah.
I was surprised.
Yeah. After she dropped out, I had an open tab of that New York Times story mm-hmm. about her campaign. I was like, okay, I have to read this. And it sort of suggested like she might drop out in September. So it didn't seem like, I guess it did seem abrupt just because there are people, she was polling at about 3%. But at one point, like, I think after that first debate, yeah. she was in the lead for a few days. She had 20,000 people at her announcement in Oakland.
Yeah. It was a pretty, like, quick rise and fall for her, which is why I think it's so much more interesting than anyone yeah. else who's dropped out. Even, like, Beto, who also had sort of this flash in the pan moment and then yeah. struggled. She was like front runner status. Beto was never really there.
Yeah. I would say Pete kind of eclipsed her.
Yeah.
Eventually.
And it's really interesting. If you guys haven't read this New York Times article that came out about her campaign, it's basically talking about, number one, she had one of her top aides quit rather abruptly.
She published like a very sort of scathing resignation letter, right?
Yeah, and her resignation letter basically was like, I've never seen a campaign that was so disorganized or has treated people as poorly. She was like, I think that Kamala is the best candidate, but we're 3 months out of Iowa and we have no clear vision to win. It was like pretty damning. And this came after Kamala had kind of hastily fired a lot of people and moved all of her offices and like really restructured the campaign. And I think this this top aide was like really upset about the firings and the way that those firings were handled.
And that ire seems to, we don't know, it seems to be aimed less at her as a candidate and more her campaign manager,
yes.
who I think she carried over from her Senate race and mm-hmm. Who managed the campaign along with her sister, Maya Harris. And just seems like there wasn't, Like that piece said that like after they did those massive layoffs to focus on Iowa, her sister, like they had no idea it was going to be that many people and like the optics of it. And 50 current and former staffers spoke to the New York Times about this, which is crazy. Yeah. Your campaign's got to be kind of a mess.
Yeah. You get a really, if you read the article, you get a really interesting picture of a campaign that had a really great, strong candidate that just didn't know what to do, that like lacked vision, lacked an ability to go forward. I think she also, what has clearly come out of this primary is this liberals versus moderates thing. And I think that she kind of never really found her place in that debate. Whereas you see someone like Pete, who I would say started out kind of in like a progressive area and then really saw that he was like, no, I could actually stake a claim out for myself by being this like
not Joe Biden
alternative to Joe Biden. Yeah. So he kind of made this really successful pivot. But I think she got caught in the middle there. I think Cory Booker is caught in the middle there. Beto, too. I think all the people who got caught in the middle of that, of those two sides have been really, really struggling.
Yeah. Right, right. And it just also seemed like the way that they had strategized, like which states to win, were just not really like they. This piece was saying that they'd use sort of like California strategies to win a national election. I don't really know what that means.
Yeah.
But just not focused on the right ways. And she went through like, she cycled through like several different taglines. I mean, the only part of the piece that really implicated her was that she seemed to have a hard time helping her campaign decide on what that vision would be, which I bet was just sort of out of desperation. Like, I feel like we've all been in that place where you feel like you need to, like, you're working on a project, you have to incorporate so many different things that your final result is just muddled and bad.
Yeah.
And I like totally felt like, that as I was reading that. And it's like, I should have just taken, like, remember her final slogan was justice is on the ballot. What does that mean?
Yeah. And then it's what for does that the
mean?
People.
What does that mean if I need to, like, if I have student loans or I can't feed my kid? Like, what does that mean?
I think there was like a part of her campaign that wanted to do this, like, I'm the prosecutor thing.
Yeah.
But then Kamala is a cop became kind of like this meme. And that was actually, I feel like they put a lot of stake in like, okay, we're going to do this like for the people justice thing. And then when that was turned on her as a negative, they didn't know what to do with that. Whereas like, you know what Liz and Bernie are. Like, Bernie, out and out socialist. He's the progressive guy. That's it. Elizabeth Warren is like the big banks regulations person.
Yeah.
Pete is the young, new, moderate upstart. Joe Biden is fucking Joe Biden.
Right.
Even Andrew Yang, who like I would say is kind of has staked out like his own little special place as like the outsider tech guy, whatever. Obviously, he doesn't have the polling numbers of those other people, but I feel like he stays. His momentum grows and stays because he has a thing.
Yeah.
And I think the candidates are struggling, like, they don't have a thing. Amy Klobuchar even has a thing.
Yeah.
She's in the moderate lane. It's true. We know that she's there. So I feel like Kamala never found her thing. What's sad is that as of right now for the December debate, only white candidates have qualified now. With the loss of Kamala, Castro hasn't qualified.
And before the Yang gang gets on us, Andrew Yang has not yet qualified.
He is not yet qualified. And he should. Yes, I want to see him. I think Andrew Yang belongs up there.
He's a huge player in this election. I still can't believe that Julian Castro wasn't in the last one. But
it's crazy to me that Tom Steyer is. Not that I even have a hate
he's
for
still
Tom
in the campaign.
Steyer.
Did he make the... Oh, my God.
Like, Tom's... I don't understand how that keeps happening.
I love how, like, Kamala, like, threw one more elbow on her way out. And she was like, I'm not a billionaire. That's why I can't keep going.
Yeah.
These guys can. I can't.
Yeah, and I mean, there is definitely, I do think that Kamala ultimately succumbed to some very serious problems with her campaign, but there is something to think about which people are able to sustain themselves through that. Like, has Joe Biden had a great campaign?
No.
No. But he is able to sustain himself via, like, mega donors and all of this stuff. And, like, why is he able to do that as opposed to a Cory Booker, a Julian Castro, or Kamala Harris? So it is interesting to think about.
And I also want to make sure we know, like, for all of the weaknesses in her campaign, you do have to wonder if a white male candidate could have sustained, could have worked through that. She was absolutely held to a higher standard because she's a black woman.
Yes.
The media, this always happens where it's like, then after she dropped out, suddenly she's the best person ever.
Yeah, and everyone's like, oh my God.
And none of her problems were that bad. It's like when Hillary was running, people just grabbed on, like the media afraid of being accused of not looking at both sides, just grabbed on everything. And they really did sort of like, they didn't embrace the Kamala as a cop thing, but they were like, oh, this is something people are saying. Let's make sure that we present that perspective. And I think it eclipsed all of the other amazing things about her.
Yeah.
And she couldn't survive it. And I don't know if that would have been the case for somebody that didn't look like her.
It is interesting to see other people who I don't think are doing much better than where she was at, who are still in the race. Like, John Delaney is still technically in this race. That is crazy to me.
Yeah.
But it does kind of speak to, like, if you're a woman of color, maybe that pressure feels like so much more, and you can't just skate by in the background and be like, no, I'm just going to keep my campaign going.
Right.
Like, she had to make a decision probably faster than some of these other people.
And I appreciate that, because, like, I don't know if this was a calculation, but, you know, she canceled it right before a huge fundraiser. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder if they were like, give your money to somebody that can win. Like,
and also, here's what I will say, the silver lining on all of this is that now we've got Kamala Harris laser focused on this Senate impeachment hearing. She's not missing a day of work.
I was thinking yesterday, wouldn't it be so, because she's on judiciary, right? I was thinking like, oh, what if she just showed up? She like took the red eye and was like, I'm here.
Yeah, like I'm glad that we're going to have
yesterday
her.
Oh, yesterday was the House, never mind. But yeah,
it's okay. But she'll do it for the Senate, and I think they all have to come back. Every senator has to show up to vote for impeachment.
Yeah.
But I like that we're going to have her 100% on her game. She's not flying in from Iowa.
Nope.
She's not tired. She's ready to go.
Cooking with random people in their homes.
Yes. And who knows the next administration, if there will be a place for her.
Oh, yeah.
Within there.
Right.
I feel like that's, you know.
She has a very bright future.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she's going to be okay ultimately.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to one more thing. Ugh. Yesterday, the Trump administration finalized a rule that will tighten work requirements for people that use SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. That's food stamps. 36 million people get assistance through this, and about 700,000 would be disqualified if the rule goes into effect.
Right before Christmas.
I know. It's gross. The rule applies to 14 and 49-year-olds, basically, who, like, don't have kids or caretaking responsibilities, who are able to work, who don't have any physical limitations to working. They have to work 20 hours a week for several months to qualify for the stamps. But a lot of – that's, like, already a rule, but a lot of states waive that because they have high unemployment. So this new rule would basically say, nope, no waivers. Everybody sticks to this rule. Only states that have an employment rate of above 6% will be permitted to sort of allow a little bit of a grace period for people. National unemployment was last at 3.6.
I know that this could seem like, oh, well, maybe they should do that. But I mean, I just think about like my friends coming out of the recession who were trying to get jobs. Like, I know so many people who were trying to get jobs for many months. Like, people lose their job and shit happens, and you can go several months without having a job.
Very long.
Even though you're applying, even though you're doing everything in your power to try to get a position.
You at work, if you're hiring for a position and like you are also really busy, like you might not get to even hiring. Like, that person's at home waiting for a paycheck.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly. So
it doesn't mean you're not trying.
Exactly. I know so many people who have lost a job and really had to search for a long time to find new employment and like gainful employment and stuff. Yeah. So it's like, it just sucks. It's also really messed up to do before Christmas. It's also really messed up coming from people who are supposedly all about Jesus and the teachings of Jesus. I'm pretty sure Jesus wouldn't take food from people who are poor.
Right.
It's been a little while since I've gone to church, but I'm pretty sure if my big takeaway is that he definitely wouldn't take food away from people who are poor.
I'm pretty sure that's like exactly what he was not saying to
do. Like, I don't know, I would think.
Yeah. That's it for today, guys. Don't forget to stay tuned for my interview with Teresa Younger about women in healthcare. Mm-hmm. It's a good one, and we will have her back. Let me know what you want us to talk to her about. We are still running our giveaway for the Apple Watch. So review this podcast on iTunes or sign up for the newsletter, and you will be entered. Just shoot us a Instagram message on SUP, and I will enter you into the giveaway.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, Good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
Okay, this is Amanda. We are back with Teresa Younger, the president and CEO of the Ms. Foundation for Women. Welcome, Teresa. Good to have you back.
Thanks for having me, Amanda. It's good to be back.
Yeah, yeah. So today we're going to talk about women in healthcare. We're really excited to have Teresa on regularly from Ms. Foundation to sort of talk about the United States of Women and yeah. sort of look at how these issues that we're always sort of talking about, how they impact women directly in ways that seem obvious, in ways that maybe aren't super intuitive but are super important. And we wanted to start with healthcare because anyone who's watched a debate has gotten their fill of healthcare recently. But, you know, it's sort of been discussed in terms of the candidates' plans, how much money they're going to cost, right. you know, the value of something like Medicare for All. There have been maybe even more discussions than I was expecting in some of the debates about women's health specifically. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely more to say that I wish people were talking about. So we wanted to start really broadly with, you know, how and in what ways do the failures of our healthcare system disproportionately impact women? Well, assuming that they do. And I think the answer is yeah.
The answer is yes, yeah. right? I think one of the things we have to call out first off is that we don't talk about women's health. We talk about healthcare more broadly. And so we really need to be having a conversation that's intentional about women's health. And why is that important? Because for a long time, and we continue to do it today, women are not seen as separate entities that actually have specific healthcare needs, not special, but specific, right? So we know that there's not enough research being done on women. So they test medications, pain medications and other kinds of medications on men that are 170 pounds yeah. and 6 foot tall, and they never test them on women who might be 5'2", right? So we're over-medicating on sleeping pills and all these other kinds of medications because they were never set for women. And so we need to really actually take that research and understand it. It's gotten so bad that for years, people believed that when women were having a heart attack, it was the same way that men were having mm-hmm. a heart attack. And because we hadn't done any research, we just didn't pay attention to what women were saying. So women are coming in with very specific healthcare needs mm-hmm. that need to be addressed and need to be researched. So off the top, I think we just need to be specific about it, and we need to understand there needs to be more research on it, and we need to have access, and we need to talk about it. So access is everything from even being able to identify it to being able to understand it. And there are things that go on in women's bodies that don't happen in men's bodies, right? When we were preparing for today, we found that 1 in 10 women have endometriosis, right? They may go up to 7 to 8 years explaining their pain and what is happening in their bodies to their doctors before they are ever diagnosed. Well, guess what? men don't have endometriosis mm-hmm. the same way that women do. You know, so, yeah. so, you know, if we don't have the research, then we don't have the answers to be able to actually help us with some of the concerns that are happening with women's body. And having access means that if doctors have research, then hopefully they will read it. And we know right. that sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
And that will help them in diagnosing women so that we don't have to go on so long. Mm-hmm. So I think those are some of the top things that we need to keep in mind. And then, you know, the other thing we have to also keep in mind is, well, many of us have access to more and more women doctors and nurse practitioners. The reality is only 1/3 of CEOs of hospitals are women.
Wow.
And so when we start talking about whose voice gets carried into what conversations about what sets of issues, we're still lacking on where women's voices are and how they can influence policy and the issues that are going on out there.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned, we're starting to have more knowledge about how a heart attack in women presents. And that brings me to a question of, you know, women's health outcomes in the U.S. are not as impressive as they are in wealthy nations. And I'm wondering if you can sort of talk to how much of this has to do with a flawed system that can make access difficult, and how much it has to do with implicit or even willful bias on behalf of medical professionals. And how do you think that plays out, you know, between women and their doctors?
Yeah, so, I mean, first off, we have to fully acknowledge that in this country, the idea of a conversation between a woman and her doctor still yeah. is completely politicized.
Yes.
And so if we can just acknowledge that, then we can understand where some of these other pieces come into yeah. play. And that most policy is being made by men for women. Mm-hmm. And so if we just, you know, get our hands around that too, yeah. we understand what that looks like. And then let's fully acknowledge that race in this country is still significantly not talked about.
Yeah.
And we start seeing those disparities in health and women's health and Black women's health and women of color of all backgrounds all across the board playing their way out. And so we know that with, particularly with Black women, right, diabetes, heart disease, issues around high blood pressure, issues around cancer, breast cancer particularly, are all undiagnosed, underdiagnosed, and are prevalent in those communities, and that we don't look at what are the stress factors that are affecting mm-hmm. those communities. And in many cases, there are doctors who do not see it. They don't recognize, when we know this from the Serena Williams stories that mm-hmm. we just started seeing, right? They don't recognize women's pain on one level, and they don't recognize women of color, particularly Black women's pains, on another level. Mm-hmm. So there's no real acknowledgement. So what does that do? That creates even greater health disparities because we're not getting our needs met in any spectrum of the work that we're trying to do or the healthcare we're trying to receive. And when we are telling our stories as women to our doctors or our healthcare providers, they are only getting the information that they have from the sources that they have, which are incomplete and inefficient research sources. Mm-hmm. And we have to fully acknowledge that their bias is coming from what this country has produced, a significant bias to people of color. And so when we go in and tell our stories as women and then as women of color, we get dismissed and not heard in the stories that we are trying to tell.
Yeah. And so much of healthcare is preventative healthcare. But if you go to your doctor and you're dismissed and your pain isn't taken seriously, or you're even accused of imagining it, I can't imagine. I think a lot of people have probably been through that, and you really can't imagine really wanting to go to the doctor again.
Right, and if we fully acknowledge that, you know, one, how many of us have jobs that allow us the flexibility of going to the doctor when they want us to show up?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And then if we recognize that there are poor women and women of color who are not in the highest paid jobs, they are in the lowest paid jobs, yeah. doing the hardest work, and they don't have the flexibility of going to a doctor's office. And I know many of us who listen to this show have waited for an hour for the doctor, right? Yeah. And if you are on a salaried position, an hour, and you get medical care, and you get time mm-hmm. off for your medical services, that's one thing. But if you're an hourly employee, and it took you an hour to get there because you use public transportation, and then you wait another hour for your appointment, and then you have to go pick up your prescription. Mm-hmm. Let's just say your doctor heard you all the way through that.
Right.
That's half a day of wages that are not provide it to you.
Right.
And so that's a real problem. There's a real concern about what that looks like. Now, if you're a woman who hasn't been heard by their doctor and has to go see another doctor and another doctor, and for each one of those visits, you pay a copay that, you know, then extends the costs of those visits, and over time, you don't get heard. You just keep paying into a system that isn't effectively providing its services for you.
So I read a statistic today that 30% of Black women and 24% of Hispanic women are enrolled in Medicaid compared to 14% of white women. And the Medicaid sort of intersects with laws in our countries in interesting ways. We have the Hyde Amendment, which blocks federal Medicaid funding for abortion. And there are a lot of ways that our laws can sort of interact with, you know, publicly given health care. How does that disproportionately have a negative impact on vulnerable women and women of color?
Well, you know, I think once we recognize that healthcare shouldn't be just left in the hands of legislators to determine what that looks like, then we can have a better understanding of what's going on, right? Right. We have the Affordable Care Act, which was supposed to guarantee preventative healthcare and health access for everybody, whatever healthcare plan they have, whether it was worker, whether it was workplace provided or whether it was Medicaid. And so, you know, just having an understanding of what that looks like and what those laws are. If we can believe, which I do, and at the Ms. Foundation we do, we believe that healthcare is a human right and that in this country everybody should have access to it. But when you create laws and that you have to fight for to have your preventative healthcare coverage covered, right, that just seems like who's making up the laws and then what are we negotiating out and negotiating in? And so with the Hyde Amendment, states have to provide the baseline of what the federal government provides.
Okay.
They could provide more, but instead our states try to provide just the baseline. They don't provide, they don't sit in a position that says we should provide women more services for what the healthcare needs they are. And childcare, childbirth, maternity, abortion, all of those are part of what happens to a woman's body over her lifetime, and she should have what we consider a lot, talk about a lot, which is full bodily autonomy to make decisions about her body in the most informed and supportive way that they can take place. And so when we start talking about the laws that are out there, we start piecemealing together women's health and healthcare overall. And so when we do that, then we start asking individuals to be experts in the laws that have been pieced together. And those individuals out there who are just making enough to pay their bills or not making enough to pay their bills, who are sacrificing their health care for their child's health care, who are, you know, trying to figure out systems that can actually support their health care, then have to try to figure out what all these pieces are. They think they have access to one thing and they don't. And we know the cost of being a woman in this country because of what our bodies do and don't do actually increases the cost of our living over what men have to pay for, right? So we just need to be really aware of all of these pieces about what the laws are out there and how we start taking apart women's bodily autonomy and ability to make decisions for themselves, and assuming that we are not mature enough, responsible enough, or don't understand what decisions we want to make. And so we really, you know, I think if you ask the average person, do you think your health care covers X or Y, they're going to say yes or no. But most of us have no idea what our insurance costs. And those are what our insurance covers. And that happens also regardless of what your economic status is, right? So, you know, if you're relying on the federal government and then your state government to provide and help underwrite the costs of your health care, then it just requires you to know so much more. And who has the time to piece that together? You're trying to raise your family. You're trying to work. You're trying to take care of your loved ones. You're trying to make sure all these things happen. And they, you know, and you need something that you need to be, one, listened to, and you need to be getting high-quality health care where it is closest to you.
Yeah. As you're saying this, I'm reminded, you know, when we hear things about states, you know, refusing Medicare expansions, that's a woman's issue for all of the reasons you just listed. And so, how do women's health outcomes in the U.S. compare with those in other wealthy nations, maybe that do have greater access to healthcare, and you don't necessarily have to think of, there might be a more standard way to access it versus what you were just describing, mm-hmm. which is it's changing all of the time. It can be a full-time job just to figure out what you can, what procedures you can have done that you may, or that you need, that won't, you know, put you in, into debt. How do women's health outcomes compare to countries where that might not be as big of a factor?
Yeah, in some recent research that looked at the 11 top countries, top high-income countries, the United States actually had most women reported having the least positive experience. Wow. Right, so they're going in, they're not getting heard. They're not, nobody is paying attention. They are not understanding what they have going on. So, you know, the idea that our healthcare in this country actually is comprehensive and that everybody loves it, we only love what we have because we don't know what the alternatives are. And if you knew that you could show up at any doctor's appointment on any given day and have qualified health practitioners take care of you, listen to you, take care of your family, listen to what the, their concerns are, then you would be approaching it from a very different way. Mm-hmm. And the United States is one of the few, you know, countries at this level that actually does not have comprehensive, affordable health care for every person in the country. And so we know that the cost of health care bankrupts families. And that level of stress, you know, also plays prevalently into health disparities that, you know, make that determine how women are going to make decisions about their health care and those of their families.
Yeah, and you've started to speak to this, but apart from the substandard care that we've been talking about, how does the cost of health care and the lack of quality in health care contribute to women's kind of further marginalization? It sounds like it takes up a great deal of real estate, especially if you're a working mom, maybe a single mother.
Yeah.
Not earning a ton. How does the failures and the weaknesses in our healthcare system sort of contribute to keeping those groups down?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things we need to keep in place, right? So we need to look at the infrastructure and transportation in this country, mm-hmm. which plays into how and if we get to an appointment. We need to look at significant pay disparities in this country, particularly for women of color, who are making much, much less than their male counterparts. We need to look at issues like what does the workforce look like? So those who women of color work in the lowest paying jobs and the service sector in this country who have the least flexibility mm-hmm. of being able to get the health care that they need. So on top of all of that, then you've got a litany of issues around women who are trying to make decisions for themselves and their health care, which they often put on the back burner. And so it's not about preventative care for themselves. It's about them prioritizing their loved ones, whether that's their children, their parents, their partners, or their spouses. It's about prioritizing when those appointments get made. We have separated in this country issues like dental care from health care, and that is a significant cost to many. We know when you have healthy mouth, you have healthy body, mm-hmm. Because there's so much disease that gets carried in the mouth. I mean, there's a litany of things that we've tried to segregate out all of these pieces that are not playing their way in smoothly. So, you know, you're making all of these decisions about your own healthcare. You're trying to find a provider. You're trying to get to those appointments. You're trying to work it out through your workplace, if you have a workplace that's going to give you that time off.
Right.
And we still don't have paid family leave and paid medical leave across the board, so people can't just take time off and get reimbursed for it. And those financial disparities are significant. On top of it, you know, people don't like to talk about it, but it does cost more to be a woman.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so there are very simple things like the cost of tampons and pads for a woman's menstrual cycle that are still coming out every month out of our income and out of our pockets. And, you know, that's not subsidized, and we have no, you know, there's nothing we can do about that, mm-hmm. right? And yet men don't have those expenses. So there's a list of expenses that go on and on and on that we're not talking about, that women carry, that men are not seeing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that low-income women actually see at much greater rates, and women of color see at much greater rates.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've sort of touched on this a little bit, but I want to talk to you about maternal mortality, which is very hard to discuss without getting incredibly angry. So women in the U.S., of the study you just referenced, of 11 wealthy nations, have the highest rate of maternal mortality, because largely because of complications from pregnancy or childbirth or health disparities before that. Giving a birth to a child in America is even more dangerous for women of color. What's going on here? And how does this connect to everything we've already talked about?
Wow. Oh, gosh. I don't even know where to begin on this, because it's really layered.
Yeah,
I think there's a couple of things. We see a higher level of C-sections performed in hospitals, particularly for women of color, particularly for black women. So that means that there may be prenatal care that's happening differently, and then they are going into C-sections, which means there's a greater need for healing on the back half of that. We are seeing that doctors are not paying attention to maternal health, particularly for black women and women of colors. They're not paying attention to our rates of pain. They're not paying attention to what we are telling them. They are truly not listening to us if we learned anything.
I mean, there are really disturbing studies out there that say doctors truly believe that black women or black people can endure more pain.
Absolutely. We see this on every level of everything that happens. I mean, racism in America is truly just systemic and built into our system, right? We see it, everything from, you know, young girls being kicked out of school, black girls being kicked out of school more often, right? We see it from adultism that happens, where we're, you know, seeing young children as 11-year-olds that's being seen as 17-year-olds. I mean, we see this a lot. Let's just fully acknowledge that racism is systemic, and it is built in and baked into our society, and we know that to be true. We know also that we need to be looking at broader contexts like doulas and midwives, so that we have other people in delivery rooms who can help us to amplify and advocate for us, another voice that reinforces what's going on in the room and who has a very specific duty. Because doctors also and healthcare providers are running around in that room, and they're really, you know, I believe that doctors and healthcare providers want to care for the person, but at the end of the day, they're also worried about the liability of a hospital.
Yeah.
And so they're not actually, you know, let's get the baby out. Even if a mother has decided she wants to have a natural birth, they may then decide to do a C-section. We know that in story after story after story after story, right, that women have said they needed more pain medication. They didn't get it. They said the baby was coming. The doctor wasn't paying attention. They said there was something wrong. Nobody was listening to them. They come in and check on them sporadically. Oftentimes, you know, we don't know which questions to ask our healthcare provider, and when we ask them, the answers are dismissed. Mm-hmm. The list goes on and on and on around how absolutely terrifying it is in this country, if you are a black woman, to give birth in this country.
Yeah, and those things, that sequence of things, they just compound into what becomes like a very dangerous situation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, in hospitals, when doctors and healthcare providers are making decisions, they're making snap decisions, right? And so if we are not training them to be able to make the decisions with the least amount of bias, then they're walking in with the most amount of bias, and it's unconscious to them. I honestly don't think that there are very many doctors who are intentionally hurting women, but they are.
Yeah.
And we are seeing black women time and time again dying at higher levels, having C-sections at higher levels, and having more health implications to their childbirth than anybody else. Yeah. And that's really, they're just not trained, and they're just not knowing what to do.
Yeah, yeah. And also, black women are 3 or 4 times more likely to die in childbirth than white women, regardless of education or income or any socioeconomic factors. And I felt like that really, more people became aware of that when Serena Williams began speaking about her labor experience, where she had had blood clots before. She knew what they felt like.
Right.
And it ended up being very dangerous for her because they just didn't listen to her.
Right, right.
And Serena Williams is...
Right. Well, and I think what happens is also we don't talk about it, right?
Yeah.
So when we heard Serena Williams' story, we also then heard the story of many other women who said, that happened to me. Oh, that was my story. Oh, I know my body and I know what was going on. And I think we always thought, oh, it was just that poor black, young, uneducated woman. And what we find time and time again is it is also educated, elite athletes who have done research, who have talked to people who they should have known that she was apt for blood clots, and yet she had to go out and tell them, and they still didn't pay attention, mm-hmm. right? She called on a CAT scan, and they still didn't pay attention. And then, oh my gosh, Mel, maybe we should do this, yeah. right? So I think what Serena's story really pointed out to so many of us was how hard it is to advocate for yourself in the moment and to be heard. She said it time and time and time again, and how often that happens. Where women are trying to advocate for themselves, they have others in the room advocating for them, and they are just not getting paid attention to. Mm-hmm. But this goes to a long history in this country about trusting women. Trusting women, trusting Black women to have their voices heard, to be believed in what they are saying is happening to them, and then to be able to react in a way that's most informed. And we need to do that on a multitude of levels. We need healthcare in this country that actually is fully inclusive. We need to have research that is fully inclusive of women of color, that actually addresses our needs. I heard a really ridiculous report a couple of weeks ago where they were testing hormone medicine on men for women who had had hysterectomies.
Oh my God.
I don't know. That just seemed abstractly, yeah. like men don't even have a uterus. Right. So how are right. they like going to be the people you're going to test the drug on? They didn't even go that far into mm-hmm. their thinking, right?
Right.
So who are our researchers? What are the questions they're asking? Who are those who are participating in the research? How are they being really intentional? How are they documenting that? How are they breaking up what that looks like? Women are not monolithic. Right. Black women are not monolithic. Women of color are not monolithic. Then we actually need to be able to understand what those differences are and how the health disparities in some way are baked into our DNA, mm-hmm. right? You carry stress for so long in your body, it has an impact. And we see those impacts carrying through. So there might be a real actual reason for what is happening in particularly in women of color's bodies as they carry stress a little differently, as women carry stress a little differently.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So yesterday was World HIV/AIDS, mm-hmm. AIDS Day. Do you think that Americans underestimate how many women are impacted by HIV/AIDS?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. 1.1 million people are infected with HIV/AIDS, and 23% of them are women. I think we have forgotten just how this really impacts our communities on a daily basis. People are living longer. They have more access to medication. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't be having more conversation and being really intentional. It was, I was going to say it's been easily 20 years, if not longer, that the Ms. Foundation funded the first HIV/AIDS fund for women in this country.
Wow.
And so, we've been engaged in this conversation, but how do you have it? What is the research that's being done? Who's being impacted? What are the additional supports that need to be out there? Who's speaking these truths, and what does that need to look like? We know that only 16% of domestic funding in the United States goes to HIV/AIDS.
Wow.
And so, we need to be paying more attention to this. We oftentimes look at other countries and go, oh, over there, instead of looking back to see where those other fingers are pointing, which is right back at us. And we need to understand what's happening, how it is changing the lives of communities, and what the impact is.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you talk a little bit more about how the Ms. Foundation is involved in some of the issues we've been talking about?
Sure. So the Ms. Foundation, we've been around for 45 years now. For at least 35 of those years, we have been on the front lines of supporting grassroots organizations, women-led organizations, who are working in the areas of safety, health, and economic justice. And that health is really broad. So we talk about reproductive justice, which encompasses all aspects of a woman's reproductive journey, and mm-hmm. talks about parenting with dignity, as well mm-hmm. as choosing not to parent at all, right? What does that look like? We've also spent time lifting up the work that's being done in communities that nobody is talking about, like HIV/AIDS, particularly as it affects women and what's happening in their communities, right? So, we've been working for a very long time on really listening to the grassroots, what is happening in communities. So if they are saying to us, these local policies are not supporting our healthcare, they're not allowing for us to take time off from work or from school, they're not supporting our transportation needs, they are not, that the research isn't actually being done, then we are trying to support what they believe the answers in their communities are, and then we bring those groups together so they can talk about what they're doing and replicate them. And we have organizations that have been working with the Ms. Foundation for a very long time who have been doing a lot of work around reproductive rights and health and justice work, and who have been on the front lines of lawsuits and litigation across this country that is amplifying what needs to happen from the voices of those individuals in their communities. So that's, you know, we have groups in Louisiana that we're supporting, groups in Kentucky that we're supporting, in Mississippi that we're supporting, in Florida, that are all in these quote-unquote battleground states, as well as in California that we're supporting, that are really looking at what is their narrative, what is their story, how do they want to talk about these issues. Our healthcare is not just about abortion, it is a piece of our healthcare. Our healthcare and our health is about the broad spectrum. Everything, and we have worked on these issues also, everything from people with disabilities needing access to healthcare, right? And, you know, what is the table and how do they have access to getting in and being independent, to what does it look like when we're talking about infertility, to what does it look like to parenting with dignity.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole spectrum from breast cancer, right, to other forms of cancer, from diabetes to high blood pressure, really looking at what does that spectrum look like that affect the lives of women. And so what we've tried to do is be able to support those organizations that are doing work in some of the areas that we're not hearing about so prevalently in the media.
Yeah, absolutely. Because as well-meaning as sort of the high-level conversation about women's health is, and it can sometimes be reduced to even, you know, can a woman get an abortion? But if you're talking to people in those communities, they're worried about, can I get a ride to the doctor at a time when the doctor's open and I have childcare?
Right.
And those are factors that contribute to...
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we often, we make assumptions about things. It's as simple as, right, can I get a flu shot?
Right.
What does the impact of that flu shot have on my body? And where was it tested, right?
Yeah.
What is the impact of being able to get to a doctor when I have a cold or when I have some, asthma is prevalent in communities of color, particularly in urban communities, right? What is the research that's been going on about that? How does that affect women? Women who are raising children, right? We have caregiving responsibilities that have health implications to them also. And the greatest number of healthcare providers in this country are women of color.
Wow.
So that means they are the healthcare providers. They are caring for our children and our grandparents and our parents, and they have the least access to healthcare themselves.
Wow. Yeah. So if people are hearing this and they're getting very angry and want to act and do something about it, how can they get involved in some of the things that you were talking about?
Well, there's a couple of things that you can do. One, start talking about healthcare. Like, don't let any conversation go by without giving voice to your story. Everybody has a healthcare story, and we need to give voice to it, even if it's amongst your family members. I'm not saying you have to walk out on the street and yell from the street corner what your healthcare concerns are, but if we just even talk amongst our family members, that will help considerably. Contact your local legislator and get familiar with what they are working on. Mm-hmm. Let them know what is critically important to you. If you have the means, join an organization and help support telling those stories and their stories and being able to lift that up in whatever way works for you. And if you can, make a contribution to an organization that's aligned. And if you don't know what that organization is, you're not sure that you can trust them or whether they're doing good work, go to organizations like the Ms. Foundation, it's forwomen.org, and take a look at the organizations that we're supporting. We've already vetted them. And those are organizations that are doing work and on the grassroots levels in their communities. If that doesn't work for you, contact your local community foundation or women's foundation or hospital foundation and ask them who is doing outreach work. And let's assume always when we're making contributions, let's assume the best mm-hmm. and not assume people are trying to, you know, underwrite the system, you know, trying to get something out of the system. We're all trying to make the world a better place. And if we started to assume the best in people and then this process, understand that I don't believe doctors are intentionally exhibiting systemic bias against me. What I assume is that they are not trained to recognize the bias that they carry, and we as a country have yet to fully address racism in this country and sexism in this country, and until we do that, we have to keep calling out where we need to have more research, more access, more conversation. And so I think, you know, if we assume the best, then we can go into how we talk about this, who we call, what we're hoping for in a very comprehensive way, and, you know, every poll, every ballot box that you can and vote. Vote on this issue and other issues as they affect you, your families, your communities, and not just today, but into the future. We need to be thinking about what it could look like if we had fully comprehensive healthcare that recognized every person as a full human being and that provided the services that they needed.
Yeah, I think that's especially important as we get later into the century when we're going to be having a lot more health problems potentially connected to climate change. And we already know there's a lot of environmental injustice in this country.
These things are not separated, right? You know, so it's environmental justice, it's economic justice, it's racial justice. These are all completely intertwined. And we need to recognize that healthcare can't just be solved in any debate by looking at it as just one thing. How does this relate to the broader conversation, the aging of America, the browning of America, the workforce, and the environment? When we look at all those pieces, then we can start really coming up with a healthcare plan that's inclusive of us all.
Great. Thank you so much, Teresa. I really appreciate it. And that was forwomen.org. And we will share some of those links to some of those suggested organizations when we share the podcast later tonight. Thank you so much.
Betches.